We'll do a short meditation, but I've been having some reflections I wanted to communicate to you before we did that. Maybe because it's All Saints Day today, which is all over the Christian world, the day on which people remember their ancestors. For instance, my gypsy friends in Hungary will all be in the graveyards today talking to their ancestors. Been very much on my mind while I've been here. There are two people, two order members, one of whom who died recently, another one is basically entering his last phase of life. In the next few days, he'll probably die. And both of them were connected with this place. There's Anjali, who died a few days ago. And she worked for a while as my secretary here. Very, very helpful, very eager, very keen. And so she contributed at that time. Alia, who is dying, and the doctors have accepted that they're giving him terminal care, I think is the phrase. He played a very big part in the work here. He was a carpenter, working especially closely with Atala. And, you know, the very mouldings you see in this room, the door, the floor, Alia put down, of course, with others, but he played a big part in it. And so one of the LBC's ancestors, well, two of the LBC's ancestors are passing. And it's good to remember that. And oh, yes, I forgot that. I forgot that, yes. Yeah, no, that is true. She put them together. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I remember her doing it. So, well, Dhammadina and I will remember those two people very well. I'm sure others will have experienced them. But this is the way our community is. People have formed it, and we're on our way out, and it's the flame passes on to others. So let's, you know, remember Anjali, who's already gone, and Alia, who's on his way. He's stopped eating. He finds food just distasteful. He doesn't want to eat it, and he seems to be quite calm and quite at ease with what's happening. But they did their bit, they played their part. And for those of you who came through the LBC, it's people like that who made it possible for you. I don't particularly want us to focus on that sort of theme, because it's not something you can really, as it were, deliberately focus upon. But let's just remember the ancestors of the LBC. There will be lots of them before long. And I'm also remembering, as we sit here, and particularly after Dhammadina mentions the hangings, I remember so clearly the opening of the LBC and the eyes on the image being painted in the night before the opening. And the murti, the rupa, suddenly becoming a presence in the room. In tradition, it's called giving the rupa life, giving the image life. And I think it's extremely important for us to keep hold of, as it were, the magical significance of an image in a shrine room. I've spoken of this so many times, but no apologies for doing so again, which I suppose is a way of apologising. When you see very early Buddhist sites in India, particularly the monasteries, what you see is a quadrangle, like an Oxford College, and at one end there will be a larger cell. There will be cells all the way around the quadrangle. Then at one end there will be a larger cell. Often inside that larger cell is a Buddha image. often, as I've seen it, a Buddha image that completely occupies the cell. There's no room to get in with the Buddha, so to speak. But it's very obvious that those early monastics felt they were living with the Buddha. And they were in the vihara with the Buddha. Vihara, which is the usual term for a shrine room in Buddhist languages, or that or its translations, comes from a root meaning to dwell. So viharati is to dwell. So a vihara is where there's dwelling going on. Who's dwelling? The Buddha's dwelling. So you're dwelling with the Buddha. So when we're sitting here, we're connecting with that tradition that goes back to the earliest phase of Buddhism, where people felt they were still in the presence of the Buddha. A lot of very interesting material coming to light more recently about the way in which early Buddhists kept alive the sense of the Buddha's presence. There's a lovely tradition of the Gandakuti. You must know that. The flower-garlanded chamber, the flowery chamber. And this flowery chamber was the sort of room that the Buddha lived in, and it was capable of magically transporting itself. And you can understand the language of magical transportation here. It's on the level of the imagination that dwelling place of the Buddha was wherever people, as it were, conjured it. They would treat that place as if the Buddha was there. There's a famous occasion. Oh, I'm getting going now. I've got to meditate in a moment. There's a famous occasion in the post-canonical works where Ananda is found after the Buddha's passing in the Gandakuti, in the perfumed chamber, or the flowery chamber, perfumed by flowers. He's found in there sweeping the floor and putting out the Buddha's robe and bowl and a water cup, and changing the water, changing the flowers, and so on. And some of the other arahats, interestingly, of course, in this tradition, Ananda wasn't an arahant, but maybe sometimes non-arahants know best. The arahants were chiding him, saying, "Don't you realise that the Buddha's gone?" And Ananda says, paraphrasing wildly, not as far as I'm concerned, he's still here. As long as I feel he's here, he's here. And that's what we're doing. This is the perfumed chamber. This is the flowery chamber. And imaginatively, don't forget, means really, if you see what I mean. Imaginatively doesn't mean in a sort of a quick fantasy. It's a way of engaging with reality. The Buddha is really here. If we behave as if he's here, he is here, to put it rather clunkily. That's the significance of the shrine room. That's what happened when Anjali put up the hangings and Chintamani brought the murti in, and various people put the gold leaf in. Attila made the plinth with Alia. Alia would have played a big part in making that plinth out of some oak that I bought very cheap. No, it was completely... It was tropical, but not hot. etc. But we made this place out of an old fire engine shed. There were two fire engines sitting here. We created a perfume chamber for the Buddha to sit in, so that we could come and be in his presence. So I'm not going to lead a meditation. I'm just going to invite you to sit in the presence of the Buddha. Just try to sort of be conscious that in this image and through so many hundreds, thousands of people's focus upon it, the Buddha is, in that sense, present. We'll start with the Tiratanavandana, which goes back to the Buddha himself. It's a constant refrain all the way through the Pali Canon. It's said that if you can say the words of the Tiratanavandana with perfect faith, something more than perfect faith, it's with joyous faith and confidence, then you're a stream entrant. The definition of a stream entrant is somebody who can say with complete confidence, such is he, indeed is he, the fully and perfectly awakened one. The primary designator of insight, of stream entry, is complete confidence in the Buddha, Dhamma and Sangha. And then perfection in Sila, perfection in Dana. So we'll recite the Tiratanavandana, which is also a form of Buddhanusmriti, Dhammanusmriti, Sanghanusmriti. You found me those passages, I remember, some time ago. This is the way in which people did that practice. They would recite the Tiratanavandana, probably in a reflective way, and reflect on each of the qualities that is designated in that. So we're going to be doing Tiratana Anusati, and then just sit for 20-30 minutes, just trying to feel that we're sitting together as the Sangha in the presence of the Buddha.